You ever have a dream that seems real? Maybe so real that it's scary. I had a dream, this is the weirdest dream I've ever had. It's also, in a weird way, the most real dream. I was just staring at a countdown clock. It was going from 10, 9, 8, 7, and all the way down to 3, 2, 1. And as soon as it hit 0, my alarm clock in my room went off at the exact moment it hit 0. Now, if that's like not proof that all of this is a construct or we live in the Matrix, I don't know what is. I mean, it's a little bit of a leap, but if you'd like to interpret that dream for me, go ahead and drop some comments in below, tag somebody you think that can figure it out. But it was the most weird, real dream I've ever had. Have you ever had a dream that's so real, though, that it's not really so much a dream that you have while you're sleeping, it's something that is like a dream that you have while you're awake. You just believe something about your future, about what you're going through. You have basically what I'm talking about is a hope. You have a hope for something. You've got a dream that you'd love to see happen in your marriage, in your life, in maybe your relationship with your kids. There's some kind of vision you'd love to see God do in your life. But what do you do when the dream and life are completely different things? Real life and the dream are completely separate. You know, there's some studies that have been done on the human, the sociology of humanity and what we really all find our dreams in. What the base, the root of those, and it's really two things. It's belonging and significance. We all want to belong to a community. We all want to have connection with people, but we also want to have purpose. We want mission. And at the root of all of our dreams really is just belonging and significance. And maybe then 2020 shows up and it makes those dreams look totally different than real life. Belonging, we feel isolated. Significance, we don't have the job. We don't have what was clearly our gifts and our abilities are no longer in play. What do we do when life and the dream are different? Is it a matter of our interpretation being off? Do we have the wrong dream, or is it simply our understanding, our interpretation of belonging and significance? I want to look over the shoulder today of a guy who had a dream, and I want to look over his shoulder and see how that dream was interpreted and came to fruition. His name is Joseph. He comes from a pretty dysfunctional family. In fact, his dad was the victim of a generational sin called favoritism. Jacob, his dad, grew up in a family where favoritism was the norm. He implemented that and brought that into his family with Joseph. And so Joseph happens to be the favorite. And we pick this story up in Genesis chapter 37. It starts with this in verse 2. This is the account of Jacob and his family. When Joseph was 17 years old, he often attended his father's flocks. He worked for his half-brothers, the sons of his father's wives, Bilhah and Zilpah. But Joseph reported to his father some of the bad things his brothers were doing. So at best, he's a tattletale. The Hebrew word for reported is often used for like false testimony. So he's basically amplifying or exaggerating these reports about his brothers for his own personal gain. He is stoking the fire of his dad's favoritism. It says in verse 3, Jacob loved Joseph, obviously, right? More than any of his other children, because Joseph had been born to him in his old age. So one day, Jacob had a special gift made for Joseph. It was a beautiful robe, but his brothers hated Joseph because their father loved him more than the rest of them. They couldn't say a kind word to him. Now, the Hebrew language is viscerally pragmatic. It does not mince words. It does not waste words. It is so efficient. So when a Hebrew author repeats something or restates something, he is making a major point. So when he says the brothers hated him, and then he goes on, the author writes, they couldn't say a kind word about him. He's stating this, the reader would know, this is a major problem, and everybody knows it. Joseph is hated. And Joseph is stoking the fire of that hatred. It says this in verse 5, one night, Joseph had a dream. And when he told his brothers about it, they hated him even more than ever, which again, it's a third reference to this hatred. The author is saying this is a problem and everybody knows it. And Jacob and Joseph leans into it. He says, listen to this dream. We were out in the field tying up bundles of grain. Suddenly my bundle stood up and your bundles all gathered around and bowed low before mine. His brothers responded, so you think you will be our king, do you? Do you actually think you will reign over us? And they hated him all the more because of his dreams and the way he talked about them. The author is letting us know, Joseph has a problem. Joseph is at best, he's a spoiled brat, but really, he's probably a psychopath, a sociopath, egomaniacal, prideful, ingrown, selfish kid. This guy is convinced the world orbits him at the center of the universe. And he's stoking this fire. He loves the hatred. He is pouring, he's pouring gasoline on that fire every time he shares a dream. In fact, he has another dream soon after. And he shares it with his brothers, and this time he shares it with his father as well, and to his brothers. But his father scolded him. What kind of dream is that? He asked. Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow to the ground for you? Even his father has had enough of this. And his father loves him. I mean, his father's he's his favorite son. And he's even acknowledging this is a problem, Joseph. Joseph, this is a problem. You are not just dreaming. You're desiring. His dream has moved from a dream to a desire. He is now trying to self-fulfill, trying to force this prophetic dream to come to pass. He's lording it over his brothers. He is indulging in this dream, and he's trying to now, it's not just something that happens in his unconscious, he's now trying to bring it into his conscious life. He is trying to fulfill this thing. Well, I'm going to fast forward through the rest of the story because there's a lot in it, but you need to know there's a part where Joseph goes out into the fields with his brothers to help, and his brothers have obviously had enough. This is the breaking point, and they conspire to kill him. Now, Reuben speaks up and says, hey, at least let's make some money off of this guy. Let's at least sell him maybe into slavery. And so when they happen to observe a Ishmaelite trader group coming through, they decide, let's sell Joseph. So they throw him in this pit, and after he's there for a while, they see the Ishmaelites, they take him out, and they sell him to slavery. He ends up at a house for one of the officials, one of the leaders of the entire security detail for Pharaoh. His name is Potiphar. Potiphar is basically the head of the Secret Service. He buys Joseph, puts him to slavery in his house, and eventually, though, Joseph works his way up the ranks of trust with Potiphar. He ends up overseeing all the household activity and slaves and all the other operations of Potiphar's house. And if you're Joseph, you're thinking maybe this dream's going to come to pass. I mean, Potiphar is, after all, the head of the secret service for Pharaoh. He trusts me with his whole house. Maybe this is the dream coming true. Potiphar's wife approaches Joseph at one point and tries to seduce him. Joseph resists and he flees. But in her embarrassment, she blames him. She falsely accuses him of trying to seduce her. And in the ancient world, if you're a slave and you're caught doing something that grotesque with a spouse of a leader, you're killed. You don't stand a chance. But Potiphar, either he knows this is what his wife is kind of known for, and he kind of assumes that maybe this isn't, you know, exactly the way she's describing it, or he has pity on Joseph. And miraculously, Joseph is not killed immediately. He's thrown in to prison. His dreams of leadership dashed on the rocks in Potiphar's house, falsely accused, unjustly accused. He winds up in prison, and at some point he begins to earn the trust of the wardens. He ends up in leadership, actually, in the prison. He ends up overseeing the operations of the prison on behalf of the prison warden. Maybe now he's like, this is it. I'm actually maybe in a new opportunity that I can leverage into leadership. I can only speculate. He ends up run into two prisoners that actually work directly with Pharaoh. One of them is a baker, and one of them is the cupbearer of Pharaoh. I mean, the cupbearer probably sees Pharaoh on a daily, if not weekly, basis. The cupbearer's job is to ensure that what goes in the king's cup is not poison. So it's kind of a tough job. You have to sip everything before Pharaoh to make sure that it's not poison, make sure it's still good. The baker obviously has a really important job. He's cooking. He's a part of the staff, the royal staff. And Joseph happens to meet these people, and they have dreams. Both of these individuals have dreams. Well, that's Joseph's sweet spot. That's his gift, his superpower. He knows how to interpret dreams. And he helps them. He interprets their dreams correctly. Unfortunately for the baker, his dream was go to capital punishment, to be killed. And the cupbearer's dream was to be restored into the palace role that he had previously. And as the cupbearer sees this come to pass, he realizes Joseph has this incredible ability. And as he's leaving, as he's being restored to his original job, as Joe interpreted from his dream, he kind of turns to him on his way out the door and he says, listen, I'm going to remember you. I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you. I'm going to at some point come back for you or restore you. He kind of acknowledges to Joe, look, I owe you and I'm going to make it right. And Joe's thinking, this is it. This guy sees Pharaoh all the time. This is maybe the dream coming true. I interpreted the dreams. Maybe this guy, a part of it was him getting me a position in the royal palace. A whole year goes by, winter, spring, summer, fall, nothing. Another year, winter, spring, summer, fall goes by. If you're Joe, you're thinking, I get so close, and then it's gone. It doesn't happen. Until, after 2 years, the cupbearer remembers. You see, here's Pharaoh talking about a dream. Pharaoh has this dream that just, it keeps him up at night. He wakes up and he's distraught over this dream. He comes in the next morning, he tries to get all of his wise men to interpret this dream, because in the ancient world, they believe that your dreams talk to or handshake with reality. They're connected somehow. Somehow the dream informs how we're to live. It's supposed to either foreshadow something, or it's supposed to make Pharaoh aware of something. In the ancient world, they just believed that these dreams were not just a bad meal they had the last night. These dreams matter, and they need to be interpreted so we know how to live. And none of the wise men could do it. And Pharaoh's distraught over it, and the cupbearer remembers, hey, Joe, I know a guy. I remember there was a guy in prison that I was with. He interpreted my dream. He interpreted your former baker's dream, but he can do this. And so this is where Pharaoh finally calls Joseph's name. Chapter 41, verse 14. Pharaoh sent for Joseph at once. And he was quickly brought from the prison, and after he shaved and changed his clothes, he went in and stood before the most powerful man in the Middle East, the known world as far as Joseph knew. Eyeball to eyeball. I'm just trying to picture Joseph. He's in prison at least 2 years. Probably. I mean, well, we know it's like 5, maybe 7 years. Maybe the sunlight, he's seeing the sunlight for the first time. He's like wincing in the sunlight. The smell of fresh air, wafting, blowing into the palace. And he's, for the first time, not smelling his own filth and odor. And then the robe, the royal clothes. Maybe for the first time, he's feeling something soft on his skin. It reminds him of another robe, almost like a distant memory, almost like a dream of another robe that his dad gave him when he was a kid. The only difference is it's a very different Joe under that robe. Because here's the question that Pharaoh asks. Here's the request. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream last night, and no one here can tell me what it means. But I've heard that when you hear about a dream, you can interpret it." This, man, this is the moment. This is Joe's moment. This is Joe's dream coming true. He knows how to interpret dreams. He knows as soon as Pharaoh says it, he's like, "I know I can do this. I know how to do this. This is my gift. This is my superpower. I can interpret the dream." I mean, what do you think 17-year-old Joseph would say right now to Pharaoh? He'd be like, "I got you. I can do this. This is a softball." And it's right in front of him. Pharaoh tosses up this softball. Joseph is at the plate. He can hit a home run. And this is what Joseph says next. He says, "It is beyond my power to do this." I mean, this is where the whole palace is like, what? The cupbearer is like, Joe, this is your thing. What do you can do this. You did it. You did it for me and you did it for the other guy. You can do this. Joe, you know you can do this. I'm kind of like, my reputation's on the line, Joe. I brought you in front of the Pharaoh, and what do you mean you can't do it? Can't do it. It's beyond my power. But, you know, that isn't the biggest bomb that goes off in this exchange. That's political suicide. But what he says next is physical suicide. This is the worst thing he could tell a deity, God, king, Pharaoh. Joseph replied, "But God can tell you what it means and set you at ease." If you're an ancient Hebrew dad or mom and you're sitting around the dinner table and you're telling the story, this is where the kids, this is where everybody leans back and they say, "Oh, it's over." Joseph just told a deity king. You know, this is what they believe. Pharaoh believed he was God. You know, he is God. Everybody worships him as God. He's not just a CEO. He's not just present. He's God. And anybody that disagrees with that doesn't stand a chance, doesn't live past that belief. They don't live past that statement. And he just told Pharaoh that even if you are a God, you're incompetent, but you're not God, and only God can interpret your dreams, and that's not you, because obviously you can't interpret it. You know what Joe just did there? This is what Joseph just did. He just killed his dream. He just killed it. This is the dream. This is the moment. Pharaoh, the most powerful ruler on the planet, needs you. You can help him. And you write to his face, tell him the truth, that only God can help him. That's killing the dream. Joseph chooses his worst nightmare. Because let's be honest, that's what dreams are when they don't come to fruition, right? When dreams don't happen, it is a nightmare. That's what your nightmare is. And Joseph chooses willfully his nightmare in order to honor God. Make no mistake, this is not a story about following your dreams. This is not a story about not quitting on your dreams. This is a story about killing your dream. This is a story about exchanging your dream for the honor and the glory of God. That's what this story is about. Joe had to come to this place where he kept getting close to the dream, and as soon as he was there to take it, as soon as he could take it, God takes it away. And then it happens again in Potiphar's house. It happens again in prison with the cupbearer, and he gets so close and God takes away. And then Joseph, you got a chance to do it. And he himself sets it aside for the honor and the glory of God. Now we're going to stop here. We're going to come back to the rest of the story next week, but we can't go any further until we just stop and ask this question. What is your dream? And is it anything other than the honor and the glory of God? Listen to me. You are only as surrendered to God as your tightest grip on some dream in your life. You're only as surrendered to God as you are clinging tightly to some other dream in your life. And you don't learn how to surrender. This is the hard news I'm giving you today. You don't learn to surrender your dreams. You don't learn to surrender anything in the comfort of the coat, to use Joseph's early childhood, that comfortable, in the comfort of his favoritism of his family and his dad. You don't learn it in the comfort of the coat. You learn it in the pain of the prison, in the pain of rejection. That's when you learn to surrender, right? We don't know, I don't know anybody that's ever surrendered their life to God because they're sitting in lavish comfort. They're indulging in all maybe their 50th sunset, watching their sunset go down there on their fourth beach house in Tahiti, and they surrender everything. No. People surrender when they're broken, when they get to the end of themselves, when they're at the bottom of the pit and they didn't think they could go any further, and they go even further down and they cry out and they say, God, help me. I'm powerless. I give up. And so listen to me. If 2020 has been your pit, if it has been the undoing of your dreams, listen to me. That is the place that God brings us to when we can say, I got nothing but you. You see, Joseph, before he even walked into the palace, he knew what he was going to say. Because at some point in the pit, he exchanged his dream for the honor and the glory of God. Not people bowing down to Joe, but people bowing the knee to God. And until you make that exchange, you're not going to let God be God. You know, he can't use you unless he breaks you. And this is the hard news. It's so hard because every one of us have a dream to belong and have purpose and significance. But all of us are born broken and bent to thinking that our belonging and our significance is something that we can interpret and figure out in our own lives and make our own way and look at the dream of belonging and significance and figure it out on ourselves. And what Joseph's telling you this morning is he's saying, you don't have the power to do that. You don't have the power within you. You gotta be broken down to the place where you go, I don't have the power to take that dream and make it happen and figure it out. But God can. God can interpret the dream. And he does interpret the dream. And he puts you at ease. And before next week, we can talk about his interpretation. We got to just start with, do you want it? Are you going to listen to it? Are you going to surrender to it? Maybe this is your moment. 2020, you've been wondering, what's the purpose? Here's the purpose for 2020. It's God saying, hey, give up your dreams. Quit following your dreams. Quit trying to make your dreams come true. I'm your dream. I'm your dream. Everything you're looking for in life is in me. So here's what I want you to do before next week. I want you to audit your dreams. I want you to audit your dreams. And sometimes the best way, I know it's a little dark, but the best way to figure out what my dreams are is to ask the inverse. So here's the three questions I want you to ask before next week. And I want you to dig down to the bottom of this, but I want you to ask, what's my nightmare? What was my nightmare scenario in life? You know, because what it really is it's the inverse of your dream. It's the thing that doesn't happen, the dream that doesn't come to fruition. That's your nightmare. What's your nightmare? Number two, why is it so terrifying to you? Why does it scare you? What's terrifying about it? What's underneath that? Is it a lack of, you want control? Is it the fact that you got your identity wrapped up in your resume? Is it because you got your identity wrapped up in a particular relationship or net worth? What is it? Why is it so scary to you? Number three, What does God's word have to say about that?
What is God's interpretation of your nightmare?
What's his interpretation of your dream?
One of my favorite shows is the Antique Roadshow. I watch it alone a lot because no one else really likes it as much as I do. But it's a show, for those of you that don't know, it's a show about antiques, and that the people bring their antiques, or really it's kind of their garbage, in front of experts who've studied that garbage. They've studied that era of garbage, the designer of that garbage, and all. They know every intricate, it's crazy how they know all the intricate aspects of that garbage, that antique. And they ask the same questions every time. It goes like this. They go, "Where'd you get it?" And they say, "Well, I got it at, you know, some estate sale somewhere." And they say, "Well, how much did you pay for it?" And I say, "Oh, it's like $50. So, okay. And then they go, the expert will ask, "Well, how much do you think it's worth?" And they usually go like, "I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea how much it's worth." And then the expert says, "Well, it could probably go for auction for about $10,000 to $15,000. And then the person faints off camera pretty much. And then bling, underneath the screen, there's an indication of $10,000 to $15,000. But my favorite though is when the guy asks, "How much did you pay for this?" And the guy's like, "Well, I paid, you know, the other guy's like, I paid $2,000 for this thing, and then I put another $1,000 of restoration into it, and I've been cleaning it for another $100,000 or whatever, a ton of money, right?" And the expert goes, "Well, how much do you think it's worth?" And the guy's like, "Well, it's got to be worth something. It's got to be worth a lot of money." And the guy's like, "Well, I think it could probably go for auction for like $500 to $600. And then that guy faints off stage because he's out like like $20,000 for all this money and stuff he's put into his antique that he thought was worth a ton of money. Here's the deal. I think a lot of us are looking at this year and we're going, man, this is pretty beat up. And you're looking at your life, even your dreams, and you're looking at what you've made of those dreams in your life, and it's got scratches over it, and you're looking at what Facebook tells you about it, you're looking at what your resume tells you about it, you're looking at what your bank account tells you about it, maybe you're looking at what your moral performance is telling you about it, and you're thinking this thing is worthless. But let me tell you something, there is an expert take on your life who knows your life, who knows your dreams, who knows you, and he knows, he made you, he designed you, he knows every part of you, and here's the thing, he talks in this book, he interprets how valuable you are, he tells you how valuable you are. You went to auction, listen to me, you went to auction, and God looked at you, and all the mess, and all the scratches, he looks at it and he says, I want that, and I'm willing to give up heaven for it. I'm willing to give up my own son. The Father looks at the son and says, you can have my son for that. I will give it all. I'll give up my status for that. It's valuable. It's worth it. It has belonging, and it has significance. That's the expert interpretation of your life, and I think 2020 is waking you up to a God who wants to be your dream, because in a way you mean so much to him as well. He looked at you and said, you're worth it. And he gave up heaven for it. Your value is infinitely high. And 2020 is God calling out to you and saying, listen, all the things that you thought were valuable, all the things that you thought were worth polishing and putting energy into and taking care of are not nearly as valuable as our relationship. So the expert's take is in here. His leadership in your life is in here. The question is today, will you listen? Do you want it? Or do you have another dream? Do you have another desire that you're going after instead? Will you quit following your dream? Will you kill your dream for the honor and the leadership in the relationship with God? Let's pray. Jesus, I don't know who's behind this camera. I don't know who's behind the TV watching it. I don't know who's behind the iPhone or the or the computer, I don't know, but you know their story, Lord. You know they're looking at their moral performance. They're looking at all the sin in their life that messed up what they think of their life and the dream. You know everything about it. And Lord, you looked at it all. You know it better than anybody else. And you still chose to give up your life for it. God, I pray that they would abandon any dream south of you and your glory and a relationship with you today, so that we might be able to listen and apply your leadership in our life as we trust your word, as we trust your love for us in this season, in this year, in this time. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.